This interview is sponsored by Wufoo, which makes embeddable forms and surveys that you can add to your website right now. Check out wufoo.com. It's also sponsored by Shopify.com, where you can create an online store right now within 5 minutes and have all the features that you need to keep selling online. Check out Shopify.com. And it's sponsored by Grasshopper, the virtual phone system that entrepreneurs love because it has all the features that they need and can be managed directly online. Here's the interview. Hey everyone, it's Andrew Warner, founder of Mixergy.com, home of the ambitious upstart, and I've got Simon Sinek with me here today. He is the author of Start With Why, How Great Leaders Inspire Everyone to Take Action. Simon, I would like everybody in my audience to become not just a great leader, though I have that in mind for them, but I also want them to build great leading companies, because if they do that, and they do it because of the work that I've done here and the interviews that I've done here, think about what that means for me, the credit that they will give me, the checks that they will send me after the fact, and more important than all of those, and seriously, the legacy I'll get to leave if I can help my audience become that kind of successful. So let me ask you this.
Sure.
Why, actually, instead of asking why, I'd love to start off with a story that I think explains the why. Why sure. Do the Wright brothers take off? And why didn't, as you say in your book, Samuel Pierpont Langley, why didn't he create the first manned airplane?
Sure. We have assumptions about the world, and we have assumptions about success and what makes people or companies successful. And what the Wright brothers did, I mean, look, it was an entrepreneurial venture. That's what it was. And they defied the common convention. And the assumption about what makes an organization successful was not what they followed. We assume, right, that to be successful, you need to have lots of money. That's normal. And you know, whenever an organization fails, when a company fails, they give you the same few reasons. We were undercapitalized, we had the wrong people, bad market conditions. It's usually some combination of those few things. And so if you go back to the turn of the century, turn of the previous century, the race to be the first in flight was like the dot-com of the day. Everyone was doing it. It wasn't like these were the only guys tinkering around in a garage. There was lots of people doing it. And the leading contender was a man by the name of Samuel Pierpont Langley, as you said. Now, Langley had what most people consider to be the recipe for success. Langley worked at the Smithsonian and held a seat at Harvard. He was extremely well connected. He knew the likes of Andrew Carnegie. He was extremely well funded, so money was not a problem. The War Department, which is the precursor to the Department of Defense, gave him $50,000 to figure out his flying machine, which was in those days a lot of money. He hired the best brains he could find. He hired the dream team. I mean, he had the best, right? And everyone was rooting for him. The New York Times followed Langley around everywhere. Everyone knew Langley, and everyone was rooting for Langley. He had what we consider the recipe for success. Then how come no one has ever heard of Samuel Pierpont Langley? A few hundred miles away in Dayton, Ohio, you had Orville and Wilbur Wright. Orville and Wilbur Wright had none of what we consider to be the recipe for success. They had no funding. They paid for their dream with the proceeds from their bicycle shop. They didn't know anybody, and no one knew them. It's not like they had tons of connections. Not a single person on the Wright brothers' team had a college education, including Orville and Wilbur. Some didn't even have high school educations. And the New York Times followed them around nowhere. And so nobody even knew they existed, right? The difference was, which was so big, which is the Wright brothers were motivated by this higher sense of purpose or cause. The Wright brothers had a dream. They believed that if they could figure out this flying machine thing, it would change the world. That's why they woke up every single day with the sense of being a part of this cause. Langley, on the other hand, was motivated by fame and fortune. Langley wanted to be rich and famous. He envied people like Thomas Edison. And he knew that Edison became famous because of his inventions, and he saw the airplane as a way he could get famous and rich. That's what motivated him every day. One was motivated by the cause, and one was motivated by the result. What they were doing was exactly the same, and they were in the same industry, right? And so we know the history. The people who joined the Wright brothers team were inspired by the Wright brothers dream. The people who joined Langley were paid to be there. And I always say, you know, when people believe what you believe, They work for you with blood and sweat and tears. When they don't believe what you believe, they work for your money. And the people who joined the Wright brothers believed. And they tell stories how every time they would go out, they'd have to take 5 sets of parts, because that's how many times they would crash before they came in for supper. You know, failure after failure after failure. It's commitment. And lo and behold, on December 17th, 1903, the Wright brothers took flight, and no one was even there to see it. A few days later, the rest of the world found out. And further proof that Langley was motivated by the wrong thing, that as soon as he found out that the Wright brothers beat him to it, he quit. He could have said, "Nice going, guys, now I will improve upon your technology," but he didn't. He quit. And there's multiple examples, from the iPod to Southwest Airlines to the VHS, the DVR. I mean, there's many, many examples where first mover did not become the mainstay and the most successful one, and even the best product didn't win out. So it was Langley's motivation by fame and fortune, and not by the sense of purpose or cause, that basically sealed his fate.
It's interesting, actually. After reading your book, I went out and I looked up Samuel Langley's story to find out who he was. And he was pretty accomplished in his time. And he actually,
absolutely,
from what I read, he also stole some of the credit for what the Wright brothers did. And it wasn't until after one of the Wright brothers died and the other fought hard that they finally got full credit for what they worked. And today, school kids don't even hear about Samuel Langley. But as you were saying, that the Wright brothers people, that they actually themselves would get in the plane, that the planes would crash, that they would risk injury to themselves, was such a contrast to what I read about Samuel after your book. He didn't even want to send a man in his plane. He wasn't sitting in the plane himself. His idea was to just send these planes up. He had so much money, from what I understand, that his plan was not to land them perfectly, but to allow them to crash into the ocean. And he was in a whole other game. He was trying to fight something completely different.
And as you said, he was already a well-accomplished guy. I mean, here was a guy who really was very well-connected, very well-known, had reached the highest levels in his own industry. And but he wanted to be rich and famous. He was, you know, it's like, can you be satisfied with the life that you live? What are you motivated by? Why are you getting out of bed every morning? And you're absolutely right. Langley was not an ill-accomplished guy, just a guy who was motivated by the wrong things.
All right, and that comes back to what what Aaron L. in the audience is saying. He's saying that he saw both types of entrepreneurs on Mixergy. And just because you're only motivated by money doesn't mean you're not going anywhere in life. You look at a guy like Langley, this story exemplifies, this story illustrates that you can make something great of yourself. But Simon, are you saying that in order to achieve that real greatness, you need to have that why? You need to have something bigger than the money, but a real purpose. Is that what I'm getting?
100%. You know, even people who come to me and say, you know, you're wrong, I absolutely am only motivated by money, and I just want to be rich, and that's why I do what I do. It's not true. I'll give you two sides of the answer, which is, one is, whenever anybody says, yes, I am motivated by money, I always ask, so what's your goal? You just want to go home at the end of the day and roll around in dollar bills, you know? Or you want to, every night, you want to check your bank account and count your bank account. That's all it is. It's about accumulation and counting and counting and counting. I'm like, of course not. I'm like, well, what do you want to make so much money for? I'm like, well, I don't want to work for anybody, and I want to be able to do anything I want on any day, and I want to go travel when I decide I want to travel, not when somebody gives me my vacation. And so I say, so it's about freedom then? They're like, yeah. I'm like, ah. So it's not about money. It's about freedom. Money is always a result. You can only make money by people buying something that you sell them or do for them. It is always a result. And if there is value, they will give you money, unless you steal it.
Okay,
and that's a result. If you're successful, if you're a successful thief, you make lots of money. Money is always a result. So when you're motivated by that, it doesn't command loyalty. In other words, when you say to somebody, I mean, you tell me, you put it out there. Let's say, here we go, here, two sides of the same coin. I want to be rich. Who wants to help me? No one else. Nobody cares, right? But if you say, I want to live a life where I have freedom and I'm not beholden to anybody, and who wants to help me do that? Other people will join you to help you be free because they desire that idea too. No one will help you to be rich because nobody cares. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares about you. And so being motivated solely by the metric won't inspire people to.
Okay, and if you want to go beyond yourself and say, not I want freedom, but I want to see a better world by putting man up in the air, or by creating a product that's never been created before, or by opening people's eyes to things that they hadn't noticed, you'll get an even bigger crowd. Now, here's a question for you. And first of all, for anyone who's listening, I'm the last person to tell you that money is evil and that you shouldn't make money. In fact,
money's great. Money's a great enabler.
Yes.
But it's always a result.
Okay, so let's suppose that we wake up every day saying, I want to make money. I want to make a lot of money. And you're opening our eyes to the fact that just aiming to make money isn't going to accumulate an impassioned crowd behind you that's going to help you get there. So you say, all right, before I even hear about the golden circle and the other ideas that Simon's going to talk to me about, how do I even get to the why? All right, I'm on board. Now how do I find that why? I know to get money. I've been trained to do that my whole life. What about how to get the why?
We are products of our own upbringing. Every single person on the planet has a why. Every single organization has a why, because organizations are products that people make, right? Your why is the sum total of who you are and your upbringing and the way your parents raised you and your experiences at school. And your why is probably fully formed by the age of 20, 21, 19, 20, or in that area, right? Probably fully formed. And the rest of your life are merely opportunities to keep your why present or not, to call what I say, to keep your golden circle in balance or not. And what I mean by that is every single organization, regardless of their size or industry, and every single person, their career, everybody's career and every organization functions on three levels: what you do, how you do it, and why you do it. That's universal, right? Mm-hmm. The problem is most of us are only even aware of two of those pieces: how and what. Strategies and tactics. We don't even have a word in business for why. And so when an organization is out of balance, when it's only functioning on two pieces of a three-piece puzzle, and all organizations and all careers function on all three pieces, when you only are aware of two of those pieces, you're inherently out of balance. Examples of being out of balance are things like being forced to play the price game. That's being out of balance. If you are obsessed with what your competitors are doing, some people have an unbalanced amount of sort of obsession with what everybody else is doing. Stress, an unbalanced amount of stress. If work is stress and every single day you're having conversations about work-life balance nonsense, you know, that's too much stress. Or if you've lost your passion and you say to yourself, it's not like it used to be. It doesn't feel like it used to be. These are all symptoms of a system out of balance, where the why is no longer clear and it's now missing, and you're obsessed with how and what, strategies and tactics, actions and results, and that sense of purpose or cause is gone. And it's that sense of purpose or cause that comes from our backgrounds that drives all of us. So it's always from yourself, it's always from your own life and your own background.
Okay. Actually, before I continue, I'm seeing from a few people in the audience that they can't see your eyes sometimes, and they're wondering if you could pick the camera up a little bit, or do we need to lower the seat? How's that, guys? I guess now you can see his eyes.
Big light in my face.
Okay, all right. Let's give an example of a company that's just focusing. That's the golden circle, right? The golden circle is
why, how, what. It's a bullseye.
Why is in the center, and from the why you get the how, and from the how you get the what you create. Why are you creating it? How are you creating it? What you're creating. In fact,
why, how, what.
There you go. For people in the audience who are just listening, he's got the circle in his hand. Maybe we should start off with an example of a company that's doing this well so we can understand all three layers.
Sure. Any company that we love, not like, we love to do business with, their golden circle is probably in balance. Apple, Harley-Davidson, Southwest Airlines, Patagonia Container Store, there are a few examples. I love to use Apple because everyone gets it and they're an easy example. I'll give you an example of that. So again, the golden circle is a bullseye. In the center is the word why, in the middle ring is the word how, and in the outside ring is the word what. To define the terms, every single organization on the planet knows what they do. These are the products you sell, the services you sell, everything. Everybody knows what they do.
Okay, and as some an outsider, before I read starting with why, I would have thought Apple's mission is to create beautiful, inspiring products.
Yeah, that's a part of it.
Okay.
That's sort of what they do, yeah. Uh-huh. Some know how they do it. whether you call it your differentiating value proposition, your proprietary process, your USP, whatever you want to call it. But again, very, very few organizations can clearly state why they do what they do. And by why, I don't mean to make money. That is a result. By why, I mean, what is your purpose? What is your cause? What is your belief? Why does your organization exist? Why did you get out of bed this morning? And why should anyone care? As a result, the way we think, the way we act, the way we communicate is from the outside in. We tell people what we do. We tell them how we do it, how we're different, how we're better. And we expect some sort of behavior. And in business, that's usually a purchase, right? But the great and inspiring leaders, the great and inspiring organizations, they do it from the inside out. They all start with why. So you wanted an example. Here's the Apple example. And again, it's a simple marketing example. If Apple were like everyone else, a marketing example would sound like this. They would start with what they do. We make great computers. As you said, we make beautifully designed, you know, products. We make great computers. It's what they do. How do? It? They're beautifully designed, simple to use, and user-friendly. Want to buy one?
Yeah. And that's how most company, that's what they would do.
That's how most happens. You know, here's our law firm. We have the best lawyers. We went to the best schools. We win all of our cases. Hire us. Here's our, you know, new car. It's got tinted windows, leather seats, great gas mileage. Buy it. Here's what we do. Here's how we're different or better. Features and benefits. Choose us. That's the norm. Here's how Apple actually does it. They start with why. Everything we do, they say, we believe in challenging the status quo. We believe in thinking differently. The way we challenge the status quo is by making our products beautifully designed, simple to use, and user-friendly. We just happen to make great computers. Want to buy one? Totally different.
Yeah.
Totally different. No trickery, no celebrity endorsements, no promotions, no sales. All I did was reverse the order of the information, and the impact, the feeling was astoundingly different. And so it proves to us that people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. It's not what you do that matters, it's why you do it, and what you do serves as the tangible proof of what you believe. But if you don't know why you do what you do, then how will anyone else?
All right, I could see that. And the companies that I'm most inspired by do have that mission, do have that reason. The writers that I'm most inspired by do have that mission, and you can feel it from them.
Yeah.
What happens if you already have a business? It's either a startup that's now struggling to get its legs, to make the next round of funding, or to bring in customers, or maybe it's even an established publicly traded company that has to make its sales and hit its numbers because every quarter it's being evaluated. And there's so much going on. How do they stop and find the why at that point, now that they've got so much how and what already built in?
Well, the why is there. It was there at the founding of the company, and if it's a good company, it was founded because of the why. You know, market opportunities are a funny thing. If you wake up every day and just chase market opportunities, that's like trying to just make a buck, right? And it's hard to get people to join your cause and work for you with blood, sweat, and tears. I always joke, when people believe what you believe, you heard me say, you know, they work for you with blood, sweat, and tears. When they don't believe what you believe, they work for your money. And so you'll find that what real entrepreneurs do, what great entrepreneurs do, is they don't chase market opportunities, they try and solve problems. Almost every great company started with a problem that somebody couldn't find the solution, and so they made it themselves. You know, your parents are in a nursing home, you hate leaving them there, you're embarrassed, it's hard, you couldn't find a good nursing home, so you started your own nursing home company, and you provided the service that you wanted to give your parents, you know? This is how great ideas and this is how entrepreneurial ventures happen. And so they all started with a sense of purpose or cause. They all started with a solution to a problem. And later on, over the course of time, you know, the greatest challenge any small company has is success. Because as you become more successful, necessarily you have to hire people who hire people who hire people. It's not the one person running off of their passion and anymore. They're not making all the gut decisions every day. And slowly it starts to dissipate. So regardless of the size of the organization, every organization started with a clear sense of why. The question is, were they able to retain it? and keep it front and center.
I see. And that's something you said earlier, that even individuals have a sense of why early on. And it's not about going out and hunting for why or putting a committee together or finding what why is best in the market today. Nope. It's about going back and getting in touch with your why.
A why is a discovery, not an invention. It is always a discovery and not an invention. And
what's your why?
It's not clear. To inspire people to do the things that inspire them. And I wake up every single day with that sense of purpose and cause to inspire people to do the things that inspire them. And for me, the fun is trying to come up with all the new and different ways what I can do to bring that to life, whether it's writing a book or giving a podcast or going on TV or writing an article or speaking or anything else that probably hasn't been thought of yet. For me, the goal is to come up with all the different ways I can share my why, spread my why. But the thing that motivates me every day is not to write a book. That's a horrible experience. The thing that motivates me every day is to share the why, to inspire people to do the things that inspire them. And those who believe what I believe help me. Those who believe what I believe call me up and say, can you come and speak at our organization? Or, you know, we do no outbound marketing because we're not interested in just shoveling stuff. We're interested in people who believe. And those who believe come to us and say, how can I help? And then they help us find things.
I was going to say, I could see that you're a different author than most authors, and I'll tell you why. Your publishing company sent me a copy of your book months ago. I was still living in Santa Monica, and for some reason, I didn't get a chance to interview you. Usually, after a month that the book's been out, the author knows that whatever pop he's going to get, whatever charts he's going to hit have been hit, and whatever aren't going to be hit, that's it. The last thing they want to do is talk about the book that they've spent so long working on up until then, so long talking about since then. They just want to be done. They don't want to talk to me about the book they wrote and published and produced and promoted for so long.
Right.
And when I was an early interviewer, I would just stop asking. I would just ask incessantly about the book that they wrote 5 years ago, the book they wrote 1 year ago, and I wouldn't get a response. Now I know to stop. You were here with me, and I was so surprised that you were still interested in talking about this book long after. I left your book even back in Santa Monica in storage somewhere. I had to buy it again on my iPhone just so I could reread it and get connected with those ideas. But I know because of that that this is real. This isn't an author trying to hit the bestseller list or finding out that bloggers are the way to go today and not Oprah anymore, and so you're coming and doing all the bloggers. This is impressive. All right, so
For me, the book is one of the things I've done. I don't define myself an author. I wrote a book. I don't define myself as a speaker. I speak because people invite me to speak, and when they stop inviting me, I'll stop speaking. But it's this cause. It's the idea. It's spreading the why to me that matters most. And so you think we're talking about a book. I think we're talking about an idea. And if it happens to be in a book, that means people can get all the details from the book, and you can get it without me. That, for me, is the joy of having a book. Which is, I can spread the idea to more people than I could ever speak to. So thank you for that. Thanks for helping.
So now, how do I help you? How do we inspire the audience that's listening to us right now? We've got a live audience here and on Justin TV and a couple of other sites, and people are going to be downloading this and putting this on their iPod. They've got all kinds of music and TV to watch. And at this point, if we could inspire them, we could change them. We could improve their lives. We could help them out. We could be memorable. How do we capture this moment, and what do we do in this moment?
Well, there's a fact, which is we live in leaderless times. There was a time not that long ago where you could rattle off the names of great leaders in business or in politics. You know, Margaret Thatcher, Ronald Reagan, Lech Walesa, Václav Havel, Lee Iacocca, Jack Welch, Lou Gerstner. By the way, these guys were all contemporaries. These guys were all living and leading in exactly the same time, right? Now, give me five. Name five great leaders of our day in business or in politics, total. You can't do it. You know, Steve Jobs, okay, we got that one. You know, maybe Obama, sort of, he's on the shelf these days, or on the fence these days. Like, you can't do it. You can't do it. Yet we have no shortage of causes. We have a shortage of leaders. And when we have a lack of leadership in the world, in business, in politics, in big business, in small business, in our communities, when there's a lack of leadership, what happens is we are lost. We have nothing to look forward to, right? And so all we can respond to is to what things that are wrong. I mean, Kennedy asked us, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Ronald Reagan talked about mourning in America. They all give us something to believe in, not to fight against, right? And that's inspiring. And when that happens, innovation goes up, productivity goes up, our own sense of happiness and fulfillment goes up, because we feel like we have a direction and we feel like we're a part of something. The most basic human desire is to feel like you belong. To feel, that's what we do with clubs and sports teams, even gangs. When you go into a neighborhood where they don't have a family and they don't have a school and all of those things that we usually feel like we belong, we seek it out, we join a gang. I mean, it's a basic human desire. And so we are disconnected in this world today. Stress is at an all-time high. Heart disease is at an all-time high. Cancer is at an all-time high. All of these things is because we don't feel fulfilled in life. And so what I'm looking for is to find and celebrate and build the leaders that we need in anywhere, business or in politics. And for me, it's about efficiency. Right? If people are going to build businesses, start with why and build your business based on why. And that way the people who come to work for you will be inspired to come to work. They will love to come to work for you. You'll make more money. You'll be more productive. You'll be more innovative, but they will love their jobs. This is the world I want to live in. And so I'm looking for volunteers. Who wants to join? Who wants to either be one of those leaders, or who wants to follow and work for a company that is run by one of those leaders? And if you do, if you're one of those, if you meet one of those two criteria, then we have to share the why. Every single organization and career exists on three levels: what we do, how we do it, and why we do it. The problem is most people don't even know the why exists. And so the more we can tell people that simply that the why exists, then the world that I imagine will happen. But we have to do it together. And so whether it's buying a book, or more importantly, giving the book away, whether it's tuning up or sharing a link of an interview or a talk I've done, or if it's just you drawing a golden circle in the back of a napkin, anything we can do, and all the creative ways that I don't even have a clue about, the more people who want to join this movement, the better things will be. And so that's the way to do it. Just stand up, volunteer, join in, and say, how do I share the why?
All right. How do people, once they come up with their why, how do they get others to follow them and help them out? How does, let's say Ryan here who's listening, and Todd and Crystal and Chris and Daniel, yep, all these guys, they say, I now know what my why is. Simon's given me freedom to express that why. I don't have to wait till I make, yep, a lot of money and then go after my why, purpose, reason for being on earth here. How do I now get other people to join in? I can barely get customers to my website. I can barely get money from my customers or investors. Now, yep, how do I get people to at least join me in my why so that we can get all those things?
Very simple. Talk about it. Talk about it obsessively. It's not what you do that matters, it's why you do it. And the more that you talk about what you believe, the more you talk about why you do what you do, those who believe what you believe will be attracted to you. You know how buzz marketing works? People. People talking. Not people who are paid, but people who just spontaneously say things, talk things, share ideas with their friends, share things with people who believe what they believe. That's what a friend is, right? What's a community? What's a culture? It's a group of people with a common set of values and beliefs. We share ideas with people who believe what we believe because we know it's good for the community. And so the more you talk about it, the more people will be drawn to you. I'll tell you my story. I mean, it's buried in the back of the book. There's a section at the back of the book called I Am a Failure. And this is a realization that I made before this whole Golden Circle thing even happened, long before the book.
I want to let people clip this if they want to, because I'm noticing that people are clipping the videos and posting it. So I'm going to let the video catch up here so that we get your video and the audio together when you say it, and then they can clip. All right, guys,
sure,
go for it, Simon. Guys, clip away if you want. You don't even need my permission to do it.
So my story is not any different to anyone else's. I started a business. I thought I had a better mousetrap, you know? And off I went into the marketplace. And when you first start a business, you're full of passion and excitement, and it's your passion that's driving everything, because, you know, you don't know what the hell you're doing. And that's not a bad thing. And you quit your good job, and you have good benefits, and you make a third of the salary and work in, you know, your mother's basement, and it's fantastic, right? And your energy and passion inspires your crazy friends to quit their jobs and come and join you to do the same. And it's wonderful. So my story was no different. That's exactly how I started my company. The problem is, after a few months, about a year, the novelty of starting a business wears off, right? And you no longer say, I'm an entrepreneur. You know, you say, oh, I have a business, we do, you know, corporate marketing consulting, and, you know, it loses its luster. But then you have this other thing that hangs over your head, and I was no different, that over 90% or 95% of all small businesses fail in the first 3 years. You know, statistically, you're nuts to ever want to start a business, but it's exciting if you're just a little bit competitive. And so my first year, we did well. My second year, we did okay. I mean, we were never a runaway success. We made a living. My third year, still in business, made a living. Again, great clients, good work, never made a ton of money, but we made a living, we were happy. And my fourth year was totally different because I got used to the idea of being an entrepreneur, and I'd survived 3 years. I now was a member of a very small group in America. And in my fourth year, I couldn't tell you why I was getting out of bed anymore. I completely lost my passion. And I know the dates, they're indelibly imprinted in my mind. From September 05 to December 05, I hit rock bottom. I came the closest I've ever come if I wasn't completely depressed. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, I had thoughts that were worse than suicide. You know, I was thinking about getting a job. Rock bottom. And again, I knew what I did. I knew how I did it. We did good work, but trying to tell people and explain why you're better, I mean, it became hard work, and I didn't want to get out of bed anymore. And I'd been tinkering around with this thing that I called the Golden Circle. I called it a Golden Circle back then, simply to explain why some marketing worked and some marketing didn't. It was an academic exercise. That was my background. And I was always fascinated how companies of equal resources, why some marketing worked and some marketing didn't. Apple, Harley-Davidson, Southwest Airlines, the same examples. And it wasn't until I met somebody by the name of Victoria Hopper who started asking me, do you know how the human brain works? The limbic brain and the neocortex, which of course I didn't. I started reading. And the more I started to read, the more I started to realize that the way the human brain physically makes decisions, the way our behavior is controlled, perfectly overlapped with this thing that I had sitting on a shelf called the Golden Circle. In other words, I made this remarkable discovery. I hadn't figured out why marketing works. I discovered why people do what they do. And I knew what I did and I knew how I did it, but I didn't know why. And I became obsessed with understanding my why. And once I gained a clarity of why, I used to call myself the way you asked me how I define myself, I used to say, I'm either an entrepreneur or I'm a strategic marketing consultant. I mean, talk about boring, right? Strategic communication consultant, blah. But then once I realized my why, I just started talking about it, to inspire people to do the things that inspire them. That's why I woke up every day. And all of a sudden, my passion was restored. I loved waking up every day now. And for me, it genuinely became exciting to share this. And it worked for me. And I showed the Golden Circle to friends, and it worked for them. And my friend said, will you show it to our friends? And I said, sure. And I'd go to somebody's house, and they'd have a few friends sitting around their apartment, and I'd talk about this little discovery that changed my life. And it worked for them. And then people started asking me, would you help me find my why? And I said, sure. And I charged people $100 to help them find their why. And everyone I met, and I would share this experience that I had and share this idea, more and more people just kept asking me, would I share it with somebody else? Would I show it to them? Would I show it to their boss? And then all of a sudden, strange things started to happen. Somebody said, would this work in the military? I said, sure, I guess. It's people, right? I don't know, yes. And so all of a sudden, I find myself, within 1 year, I had an invitation to speak at the Pentagon to the chief of staff and the secretary of the Air Force, the two highest ranking people in the Air Force. Prior to 3.5 years ago, prior to the discovery, the amount of people I knew in the military was zero, right? I get asked to do now 40 or 50 speaking engagements a year all over the world. Do you know how many paid public speaking engagements I did before the Golden Circle? One. I go on TV all the time now. Prior to 3.5 years ago, the amount of times I was on television my whole life, zero. I write articles now for magazines. How many times did I write anything for anybody prior to 3.5 years ago? Zero. I advise members of Congress now. How many people did I know in local politics prior to 3.5 years ago? Zero. I'm the same idiot now that I was then. I know no more about how to do these things than I did then. The only difference is I stopped talking about and defining myself by what I do, and I started talking about what I believed. And the things that I did were the proof. The things that I did brought it to life. The consulting, the speaking, the writing of the book. Anything you read by me or hear me talk about, it'll always have this sense of inspired or inspiration in it, some way, shape, or form, always. And the more I talked about it, people just kept showing up and say, can you help us? Can you help me? Can I introduce you to somebody? And I just kept saying yes. And so buzz is created, and champions will be found. If you believe in something and you talk about it, and those who believe what you believe will volunteer to help you for no other reason than they believe it themselves. They don't actually care about you. They just need you to help them. It's the same reason I help people. It's because they inspire me. What can I do for you? Anything. You inspire me. So the way you get it going is not so sophisticated. You just start talking about it. And eventually, as it starts to get scale, you'll need some proper structure. And that's where other people can help you too if you can't build it yourself, which is me.
What happens
Meaning
when you're
I'm
doing this?
Structure. I ask for other people for help on that one. I'm very bad at building structure.
What happens when you're doing this? You're going and pursuing your mission, and you're doing something you're passionate about, but then you see someone else. Maybe it's the Google guy, the YouTube guys. Guys, yeah. Create video website, they get backing, yep. They overnight sell it for a ton of cash, and you're yep. sitting there saying, I'm pursuing my passion for what? I should be pursuing whatever the latest, hottest thing is.
Yeah.
Maybe it's social video today. Maybe it's 3D YouTube yeah. I should be building.
Yeah. Remember what we talked about before about chasing market opportunities?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's look at the history of Facebook. How was Facebook invented? Guy at college wanted to take the physical Facebook that we got at college and put it online. And when Facebook was invented, at the beginning, you had to go to college to even be a member. You had to prove that you were in college to even be a member of Facebook. How did Craigslist get started? Craigslist was a guy at work who used to put up what was going on that evening around San Francisco for his friends. These were all solutions to problems in their own lives. That's why they worked, because they are genuine, because they are real, and here's that word, authentic. Okay? I am tired of people saying you have to be authentic. It's an unactionable command. Go be authentic. What do you do? What authenticity means is the things you say, the things you do, you actually believe. It means the things you're selling, the things you're trying to get people involved in, actually help solve a real problem or enhance your own life. You don't just think it's a clever market opportunity based on some sound market research and stuff I looked up on the internet. And you know, those ideas, it doesn't mean that they won't work, those chasing the market opportunities, but they won't last. At best, you'll have a fad if you're super lucky, but it doesn't work because we're social animals. We can resonate. We can tell if somebody believes their own stuff because they have passion. When you have passion for something, it means that it's personal. That's what passion is, right? It's personal belief. And so, you know, if you're obsessed with the success that, you know, Facebook has had or Twitter has had or all these other things that had, and you're sitting there saying, well, that's so unfair. Why aren't I successful? The odds are your why is missing. Because people whose why is missing, remember what I said, are more obsessed with what everybody else is doing and not obsessed with what they're doing. I've been through it. You know, the first thing I did after I discovered my why, I canceled all the subscriptions to all my industry trades. All the trade magazines for my industry, canceled them. Because I realized all I was doing was making myself feel bad for seeing all the ideas that everybody else in my industry was doing before me or things that I didn't think of. So I could only either react or be second or feel stupid. So I canceled them all. And now I read things that are not in my industry because I'm more interested in what everybody else is doing because that gives me ideas.
All right, let's look at some of what people said here in the audience.
If you're worried about Mark Zuckerberg not selling his business for billions, you know, start worrying about what you're doing.
Mariano in the audience said his book is now on my wish list. Pedro, it just linked to your website, which is startwithwhy.com. Thank you for linking.
Thank you. And the blog is simonsinek.com.
Simonsinek, S-I-N-E-K.com. Aaron is saying, hence Paul Graham's, quote, solve a real problem mantra. Paul Graham, the investor who keeps telling the entrepreneurs he backs, go solve a real problem.
Solve a real problem. And again, don't look for a problem. You have your own. Whether it's something that could be better, or something that could be easier, or something that could be simpler, or something that there is no response to. I'll give you a great example. I had a I had coffee just yesterday with a just recently retired CEO of a very big company. Really amazing guy. Amazing guy. And we were talking about just this, which is it all comes from real problems and real solutions. And the example he gave me, he said many years ago, he would be on business trips all the time when he had one of the first laptops, you know, that probably looks like our desktops these days. And he had one of the first laptops and it was in his bag and his back was killing him and he's got his luggage and he's walking through the airport and this was his life, you know? And this was his life for years. And then all of a sudden, years after lugging this thing, somebody walked past him. They found a bag that had wheels built into it. We used to have those luggage carts first, but nobody put the wheels in the bag. Some brilliant businessman whose back was killing him probably decided to put the wheels in the bag and boom, problem solved. And now those little wheelie bags are the norm. I mean, I don't think suitcases exist without wheels anymore. Now they make backpacks with wheels. I remember when I was a kid, I used to have to carry my own books on my back. God forbid kids should have to carry books anymore, you know? But is it better? I guess why should little kids have lower back pain? Only adults should have lower back pain.
I want to read more of what's going on here in the live audience for people who are listening to the recorded version of the interview, but I think I'm just going to recommend if you want to read everything that they're saying here in the live audience, come and watch us live every day, 11 a.m. Pacific. It's free, it's easy, you don't need to download anything, and you get to join the conversation. And for the people who are chatting and are linking away, thank you, especially you, Pedro, with the exact links. He's linking to one of your past blog posts even. All right, now I want to bring up another potential problem and then use an example from your story to address the problem and then ask you for a solution.
Sure.
The problem is you feel like you hit a ceiling. You see you've gotten as big as you think you could get with your why, with the pond that you're playing in, and you want to go and be in a bigger arena.
Yeah.
And the example is Volkswagen. I'm hoping you could talk to us about what Volkswagen was good for, what their why was, where they made the mistake, and then I'd like to ask you what you would do if you were in Volkswagen's place back then.
You're talking about the Phaeton,
yeah.
the silly mistake they made. So it's not about how big a why can get. A why can get infinitely big. It's how big the what you're doing can get, you know? So take me, for example. My why to inspire people to do the things that inspire them. So if I decide the only way that I'm going to bring that to life is to be a public speaker, right? And I do a lot of speaking, and I'm always looking for more speaking engagements. The more I can share the why, the better, right? So if anybody knows a place that I can come speak, I'll always show up. So for me, if that's what I decided, there's a finite amount of growth that I can have there because I can only be in a physically, you know, a certain amount of times a year. I will max out, and that's as big as I can get. And so then you look for other ways to grow it bigger. So just to correct one thing, the why is not a limiting factor. It's what you're doing that are limiting factors.
I see.
So books and things like that help create scale, right? Because I don't have to be in the room. So that's really important. Whys are unlimited. The potential for a why is unlimited. So your example about Volkswagen. Volkswagen is such a lovely example. Because their why is crystal clear. It's in their name. They're the Volkswagen. They're the people's car. That's what their name is. It's the people's car. And they made a reputation. You know, we all know about German engineering and the wonders of German engineering. And you pay for that wonderful German engineering, whether it's a BMW or a Mercedes. I mean, these are expensive cars. And Volkswagen really found a way to bring this great German engineering, these quality automobiles, to the average person, the people's car. And that's how they made their reputation. Really, really high quality for everybody else, right? And so there's no question they're smart people, they're brilliant engineers, but their why had to be about the average man, not about the executives. And a few years ago, they came out with a car called the Phaeton, which was a $70,000 Volkswagen. And all of the motor journalists in the motor industry hailed this car. It was a marvel of modern engineering. You know, this thing was fast, it was safe, the technology inside of it was, it blew BMW and Mercedes away. Failed. Who's going to spend $70,000 to have a Volkswagen logo on the front of their car? I don't care how good it is. Again, it doesn't matter what you do. You could have the best product in the world, but if the what you do and why you do it are not in balance, then it doesn't make sense to people because we're drawn to Volkswagen for something specific, and they offered something out there. Now, that's not to say they can't go into those other categories. They can either buy other brands, which they do. Don't they own Bugatti? I think they own Bugatti, which is the most expensive car there is.
Okay.
But like Honda has Acura, Toyota has Lexus, because we know that nobody's going to buy a $90,000 Toyota, but they would buy a $90,000 Lexus. So it's not that they can't leverage the things they know, it's that what they do has to be consistent with what we expect, what they believe. And the clearer you are about what you believe, the clearer people's expectations will be about what you deliver. And those things have to match. That's what authenticity is, that your beliefs and my expectations are in line.
Okay, so you're saying create a different brand or use one of your other brands that has a different why, and let this new car express that why and reach that new audience.
The why is still there. It's to a different audience. Like Disney. Disney's about good, clean family fun, right?
But then they own Miramax. And Miramax isn't about good, clean fun.
And Buena Vista. You know, if there are adult themes, and I don't mean porno, right. I mean like bang, bang, shoot 'em up, you'll never see Disney produce, you know, Predator, you know, but they have Buena Vista. Or the other studio names. So it's about expectations. That's really important. I think if you remember the celery test, the celery test is a way to manage that. It's just a metaphor. And like I said, we're always tuning into podcasts or reading books or seeing speakers or asking friends. We're always looking for advice about what to do or how to do things better, how to improve our businesses, right? What should you do? How should you do it? The problem is, which advice do you follow? And so, like again, I just said, it's a metaphor. It's called the celery test. And it's as if you go to a dinner party and somebody says to you, do you know what you need in your business? Oreo cookies. If you're not implementing Oreo cookies in your business, I'm telling you, you're leaving money on the table. Somebody else says to you, rice milk. In this economy, you have to be using rice milk. Somebody else says to you, M&Ms. We used M&Ms in our business and we made millions. You got to, Facebook uses M&Ms. You got to do it, right? Somebody else says to you, celery. It's all about celery. So what do? Which one do you follow? Which item do you buy? It's all perfectly good advice from perfectly good people with perfectly good evidence. Which products do you buy? So we go to the supermarket and we buy them all. We buy celery and rice milk and Oreos and M&Ms. You may or may not get value out of some of all these products. There's no guarantee. You spend a lot of time at the supermarket. You spend a lot of money at the supermarket. And worse, when you're standing in line in the supermarket with all of your products in your arms, your celery, your rice milk, your Oreos, your M&Ms, no one can see what you believe, because what you bought didn't necessarily correspond to anything you believe. Nobody can see what you believe. So people will walk past you and ignore you. Imagine if you knew your why. Imagine if your why was clear. Imagine if your why was to always be healthy and only do things that protect the integrity of your body. You will get all the exact same advice from all the exact same smart people. The difference is, when you go to the supermarket, you're only going to buy celery and rice milk. Those are the only two products that make sense, right? You're guaranteed to get value out of those products. You spend less time at the supermarket. You spend less money at the supermarket, so there's an efficiency play. And when you're standing in line in the supermarket holding your celery and holding your rice milk, everyone can see what you believe. Authenticity, right? So somebody walking past can see, just by looking at your celery and your rice milk, they can look at you and say, hey, you're healthy? You believe in being healthy? Me too. Congratulations, you just attracted a customer, you just attracted a referral, an employee, an article, a blog, buzz. Somebody says, hey, can you give some advice to me? You just created that sense of cause in somebody else simply because you said and did the things that you actually believe. Here's the best part. As soon as I said the why, before I even said that we're gonna buy celery and rice milk only, as soon as I said the why, to be healthy, every single person listening to this knew we were only going to buy celery and rice milk before I said it. That's called scale. The more you talk about why you do what you do, those who work with you, those who work for you, those who work around you all know what you need and what the right decisions are, not because they're trusting your gut and not because you laid out some set of criteria. It's because they know why you do what you do, and there are some decisions that are just obvious. They either make sense or they don't. And that's the power of why. It is absolutely scalable.
Talk about the clippable moment. I hope somebody takes this and clips it out and posts that. Again, I'm telling you guys, you don't need my permission. Go ahead and do it. I'm watching now lately, by the way. There are these gems in my interviews, and some people will just clip them or just copy the text and post them up on their website, and suddenly they get traffic, more traffic than I got in the early days. Some guy took a copy of...
Awesome.
So do it. I don't even need the link back to my site. You don't even need to include Andrew Warner. If you want to include Simon, I think he'd appreciate it. I think that's the right thing to do, but you don't even need to give me credit. You don't need to ask me. Go for it.
I don't care.
Right.
And by the way, I believe that for all my content. You can go to my blog, and I don't care if you steal articles. You can find any video. For me, it's the spreading of the idea that matters. The more people that learn about why, that means the more people that build organizations and build careers that are in balance, and the better the world gets. So you don't need my permission. You can take anything from any of my websites and repost them. Have a field day.
And here's, too, another benefit. If you go and you tell other people about this, without noticing it, it's going to start becoming a part of who you are. If you take these ideas and you write them down and you copy and paste them on your website, you're going to start to recognize that these ideas become a part of you in a way that you couldn't if you were just listening to this while you were driving cross country, or just listening to this as you were getting into work on your commute. I keep telling people, just take this stuff and run with it. Do it, copy it, write it, do what you can, but don't just absorb it in your head and expect it to do something. Go and do something, and it'll really get in there.
And what we're talking about, you're capturing something which is really very profound, which is great businesses, big or small, function like social movements. You know, people love being a part of it. They want to be a part of it. They do it because they believe in it. And that's like a social movement. So great businesses really do function the same way.
And you know, and here's another thing that the supermarket analogy that Aaron L. and the audience loved, that a lot of interviews that I do here are all over the place. If you just listen to them all, it seems like there's just endless advice being flung at you and endless possibilities. If you know what your why is, you're right. You know what to pick out of these interviews. You know what to learn from all these programs. You know what's going to make sense for you and what you should use.
The more clarity of why you have, the easier it is to weed through the morass, to know the things that are right for you. And quite frankly, it's also easier to hear criticism. You know, if somebody calls you an idiot because of what you did wrong, you can smile and say, clearly that guy sees the world a little different than me, you know? If somebody says to you, you know, you're so stupid, I made so many millions with M&Ms, why you wouldn't use them is you've got to be the worst businessman in the world. And you shrug and go, I guess I'm the worst businessman in the world, you know? Where before that would have been like, I would have had sleepless nights because of, you know, criticism like that. Now I think it's funny.
All right, well, thank you. Thanks for doing this interview with me. If people want to connect with you, how can they do that? We talked about a lot of different ways that they could read more from you. Maybe we can summarize it here.
Sure. If you're interested in more of my musings, you can follow me on Twitter, at Simon Sinek. And the way I use Twitter is I just put up crazy little ideas I have throughout the day. So you might get one, you might get 50, I don't know. So at Simon Sinek on Twitter. My blog is simonsinek.com. And if you're interested in learning more about why, or maybe even learning your why, you can go to startwithwhy.com, W-H-Y. And we have a Why University on there as well. It's a self-guided course where you can learn your why. And of course, the whole idea, the whole concept, and all the theory about how to keep it in balance and what it looks like can be found in my book, Start With Why, available to all bookstores. And most importantly, if you do buy a book, please give it to somebody that you want to inspire when you're done with it.
Well, right on. Well, thank you for doing this interview with me. Guys in the live audience, thank you. You guys have been terrific today. Not just today, but especially today. And for anyone who didn't make it into the live audience, come in the future and be a part of this, or shoot me your email afterwards. I'm curious to see what you guys think of this program. I want to hear your feedback. I get better because of your feedback, and more importantly, get to connect with smart people because of it. Interviews like this draw a certain kind of person, and I want to get to know that person. So come back in and give me your feedback. I'm Andrew Warner. Thanks for watching. I'll see you in the comments.